KALW.
This new law is going to impact all of the places that didn't have any kind of rent control on the books. And that's a lot of the smaller cities, the suburbs.
Rent control is just one issue tackled by new laws that went into effect this year. And there's more.
Police can only use deadly force when necessary in defense of human life.
Criminal justice, health insurance, the gig economy. We'll break down some of the new laws of 2020. Then we'll go in depth on an ageless story. We're headed out into the Santa Cruz Mountains to meet the owner of the Bigfoot Discovery Museum.
It's about time somebody proved this stuff is real. I'm tired of hearing the jokes. I'm tired of being put down because I claim I saw something that people don't want to believe in.
I'm Hena Baba, and this is Cross Currents. It's a new year, a new decade, and that means new laws are on the books in California. And they're varied, dealing with everything from rent control to maternity health, from police use of force to online privacy. So what is new and what does it mean for you? It can be a lot and maybe confusing. That's why the news website CalMatters has compiled a breakdown of each new law and even a YouTube playlist of one-minute explainer videos like this one.
Freelancers, independent contractors, gig workers. There's a new California law that may change how you get paid and make you eligible for some benefits, like sick leave.
I talked to CalMatters political reporter Laurel Rosenhall to break down some key new laws. We started with the one we just heard about, AB 5.
Basically, this is a law that's trying to give more rights to workers in the gig economy. It was really inspired by Uber and Lyft and the fact that drivers for those companies are not considered employees. They are considered, the companies like to consider them independent contractors. And because of that, anyone who works as an independent contractor gets both a lot more freedom in terms of their working conditions, but also a lot less protection. They don't get, you know, paid sick days or paid vacation or overtime or workers' compensation if they're injured on the job, or any of those kinds of protections that employees get. And so there was a lawsuit moving through the courts and a ruling by the California Supreme Court that established this test for when companies have to treat their people as employees instead of independent contractors. Mm-hmm. And the legislature last year passed a bill called AB 5 that basically takes that court ruling and puts it into state law and also exempted some different professions. And that led to just this massive political fight at the Capitol that's probably going to continue this year because there's a lot of workers who are very unhappy about the way the law went and they don't want to be employees. They want to be independent contractors. So we're going to continue hearing about this all through 2020. But the basic idea is, you know, trying to create more protections for workers, and the unions are really supportive of this because it also makes it easier to organize labor unions when someone's an employee instead of an independent contractor.
Okay. And I guess I want to talk next about something that's on a lot of people's minds here in the Bay Area, housing and rent. And so AB 1482 has to do with rent control. And I was wondering what it does, but also what it does, how it affects cities and towns that already have rent control.
So cities that already have rent control are going to keep in place whatever policy they have in their city. This new law is going to impact all of the places that didn't have any kind of rent control on the books. And that's a lot of the, you know, smaller cities, the suburbs, places like that. It's not, the new law is not rent control in the same way that a lot of the big cities have rent control where, you know, your rent is really locked in. What this law does is it basically just puts a cap on the amount that your rent can be increased. So that cap is 5% plus inflation. And so it means that if you're in a place that doesn't have rent control, that now you have some kind of protection from having a really high rent increase. It's something. It also, though, it doesn't apply to any housing that was built within the last 15 years. So if you live in a new condo or a new apartment, it's not going to apply to your place. And it also does not apply to most single family homes. So this is a big protection basically for people who live in apartments in smaller cities and suburbs that didn't already have rent control.
Mm-hmm. And for our next one, I want to play a little clip.
And I was like, I can't breathe. Like, I couldn't take a deep breath.
Tennis star Serena Williams knew she had a blood clot in her lung shortly after delivering her daughter. Williams ordered her own CAT scan, and her doctors saw she was right. Her story is similar to other Black mothers who have complications during or after childbirth and have a hard time getting doctors to listen. In
California. And so that is one of the one-minute explainer videos that Cal Matters has made to explain the new laws taking effect in California this year. And yes, that was tennis star Serena Williams, and she was talking about maternal health. So tell us about SB 464.
Yeah, this law will require implicit bias training for doctors and nurses who are treating pregnant women. And the goal is to improve awareness of the impact that racial bias can have on maternal health and on the health of newborns. There is a lot of research that shows that Black women are more likely than white women to die during childbirth, to give birth prematurely, and to lose their babies. And so this is a law that's trying to close that gap and make pregnancy and childbirth safer for Black women.
And I want to end with, you know, there's a lot to go through, but we have limited time, of course. I think the last one I want to end on is AB 392, which is about when police can use deadly force. This is a huge issue around the country, really, but the Bay Area and here in places like Oakland and Sacramento, where, you know, this past couple of years has seen a lot of police using deadly force. And so what does this new law say?
Yeah, this law was another really big political fight to get this one across. And in the end, the law that is now in place says that police can only use deadly force when necessary in defense of human life, which means that it has to, in the perspective of a reasonable officer, they have to be facing a threat to their own life or someone in the immediate vicinity before they can pull their weapons. And this was inspired by the rising Black Lives Matter movement and the rising awareness of police shootings. And the tipping point in Sacramento was the shooting a couple years ago of Stephon Clark, who was in his grandparents' backyard and holding a cell phone that the officers mistook for a gun when they fired at him. This really caused a lot of momentum in the state capitol on an issue where it hadn't been before, and it did lead to this new law. It's important to point out that this final version of the law that is in place is watered down from the original proposal. And in the end, Black Lives Matter felt that the law didn't go far enough. They did not support the final version of the law, even though they supported the initial proposal. And the police had fought against the initial proposal. They ended up basically removing their opposition. They went neutral. They did not go so far as supporting it, but they went neutral. And that, by sort of meeting in the middle, the two sides were able to come up with a policy that that could pass and could be signed into law, but basically it wasn't as strong as the activists wanted in the beginning. It also wasn't as, in the perspective of the police, it wasn't as harmful to police as they thought the original proposal was. So this was kind of a compromise policy that they came up with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Laurel.
Thanks for having me.
Laurel Rosenhall is a political reporter at Cal Matters. We've got a link to their YouTube playlist of California new laws in 1 minute at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Have you ever seen something mysterious? Something other people just wouldn't believe is real? Well, all over the world, there are places that honor the symbols of our many beliefs, things that may defy description or understanding. And the keepers of these shrines are people whose unwavering devotion is built on stories that make a case for faith in the face of doubt. Reporter Lance Gardner took to the mountains of Santa Cruz to learn how one man found meaning where few people care to look.
Once upon a time, early in the morning, Mikey awoke in the forest. His parents were already up and about. His father had been busy catching trout from the river, which he had cleaned and begun to cook. Mikey hated the idea of fish for breakfast, so he crept from his tent and slipped down toward the water to explore. In the brush, near the water's edge, he heard a rustle. Out of the greenery, a great, hairy beast emerged. It was towering and dark and manlike, but like no man that he had ever seen.
And I looked it right in the eyes for about 3 seconds, and then I heard my mother, "Mikey, where are you?" "Oh, Mom's calling. I better get back there." So I turned and I ran back towards camp and bumped into my parents on the way back because they were looking for me. And I told them, "I'm okay. Come and see the big hairy man." "Huh?" And I said, "Follow me." And so I took off running. I wanted to go back and look at it some more and ask all the questions. So they followed me and we went there to the spot, and of course it was gone. So they looked around for a couple of seconds and they said, "Oh, forget about it. Don't worry. It was probably a tramp." And I asked, "What is a tramp?" And they said, "That's a homeless person. And sometimes they stay out in the woods a little too long and their hygiene's not the greatest and they don't shave every day. So that's probably what you saw." So I learned that day that a tramp is a person 10 feet tall and covered in hair and wears very little clothing.
Unlike its namesake, the Bigfoot Discovery Museum is easy to find.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, I'm Lance. We spoke on the phone.
All right.
Michael?
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
It's a two-room museum of faded artifacts and disputed claims. There's no pretense, no spectacle, no irony. The short, round proprietor stands behind a glass counter. He wears a long, white beard and a cap that casts a shadow over his bespectacled eyes.
Bigfoot is a wild man, a mystery primate, if you will, that is seen by average people, normal people, and denied by science. Lots of people see these things and talk about it, and then other people put them down and are skeptical.
It's easy to be skeptical in a time when so much information is freely available. It's easy to bring words like facts and science into a conversation where they'll vaporize upon impact against a wall of faith. But I'm not going to subject this man's story to scientific inquiry. And I'm not going to give you a new and abridged history of the North American Sasquatch, because that's not what this story is about.
As Mikey grew older, he never forgot what he had seen in the woods. But boys go to school and men go to work. So he filed away his strange encounter and took on the world.
I worked in a branding agency, developing logos and interfaces. Did a lot of work for Logitech.
But all good things come to an end. And as the fickle beasts of the Valley of Silicon grew fat and burst, poor Mikey was left to wonder what was next. He searched and searched, only to find that the answer had been inside him all along.
It's about time somebody proved this stuff is real. I'm tired of hearing the jokes. I'm tired of being, you know, put down because I claim I saw something that people don't want to believe in. It's time to get involved in this with more zeal, let's say. So I reclaimed my studio here in Felton and decided to become the Bigfoot guy. And to borrow a cliche, I thought maybe if I build it, they will come. And they do. People come here from all over the world with stories to tell.
So for the last 13 years, Mike Rugg has been the keeper of all things Bigfoot in Santa Cruz County, and his museum has become a repository of alleged sightings and perceived encounters. There's a map of the county on the wall, dotted with two different sizes of pins.
The large pins are sightings. They looked out the window and they saw a Sasquatch, an unobstructed, unambiguous view. Less for sure are the smaller pins, which usually are sounds. They heard a scream they can't identify. Or they found a giant footprint. Or a huge poop. That happens quite often, actually.
And Mike can tell you the details of each encounter.
They woke up and heard the crunch, crunch, and they heard the chicken being killed. They said they were walking on a trail over in the park, and he heard something crawl out of the water on the other side. One was walking across here, and she saw something cross the road up ahead of her. He saw it walking along this ridge in 1998. Here, he was approaching this marsh to shoot a Vietnam video for a school project, and there's this Sasquatch up against a tree with a juvenile about waist high. And he got there just in time for it to jump from here to here. This is where he found an object. It was a toy nunchuck, and one night they heard a duck get killed. But it was so fast, he never could see it. I believe it 100%.
Somewhere after the 10th pin, as my eyes glazed over, I started to wonder what I came here for. I'm not looking for Bigfoot. And I'm not here to make fun of people who are, even if I'm sure they'll never find him. I think I came here to figure out what it is that makes someone care about something enough to devote their life to it in spite of unrelenting ridicule. When I ask about the plaster casts of big feet on the wall, he's quick to point out the ones he displays as examples of hoaxes. He's keenly aware of how skeptics perceive him and has grown skeptical himself of all outside inquiry into his belief.
Bad media? That's the only thing about Donald Trump I agree with. Because they have slaughtered the subject of Sasquatch. They have made it into a joke. They have trained people to think it's unsophisticated to take a serious interest in Sasquatch. And it's because of bad journalism, not doing their homework, and misrepresentation.
I tried to do my homework, and I have a few questions. But after more than five decades of defending his beliefs, he's armed with answers to every one.
What do you think they do with their dead?
They find a place that's kind of secret to die in.
Where do you think they go?
They go in areas where there aren't people.
Why haven't I seen a Sasquatch?
Because you haven't been in the right place at the right time.
So what makes you believe somebody else's story?
Well, like I said, I've heard and read hundreds of accounts, so I have a bit of a dossier from that on how a Sasquatch behaves. And so if the story they tell fits in, and most of the time they just slide right in, there's just no question, you know, then I've got to assume they're telling the truth. Especially if they look me in the eye and I can question them at ease. And they'll give me all the data to contact them and stand by their story.
The more I talk to him, the more I find myself wanting to believe. Not believing, but wanting to believe in and be devoted to anything as completely as this man is. It's with this desire that I take in the prize of Mike's personal collection.
Now the coyotes and swatches are surrounding us. Now, in a second, all the birds are gonna go nuts. Then you'll hear a faraway scream, and then a close-up scream, and then the Sasquatch. Right here.
Whoa, whoa.
That was the squatch. So now, within a matter of a few seconds, all the coyotes quieted down, and the whole band took off and headed south after the deer.
I'm not convinced, but I don't feel like he needs to convince me. I feel like he's eager to share the work that he's put into this thing. And maybe by sharing, he continues to convince himself.
But I'll have to say that if another decade goes by and we still haven't lassoed enough proof to satisfy people, then I'm going to start believing that it must be paranormal. Because a lot of people do describe what would be considered paranormal. They describe what's the terminology is mind speak and cloaking. And they claim that Sasquatch can talk to you with its mind and it can go invisible, turn into the wind and disappear.
Mike tells me there's one thing bigger than Bigfoot that's threatening to close the museum altogether.
Everything that goes on in our world, the human world, is somehow tied to money. That's really sad. Because I have found now that I'm in my 70s and trying to do this, that I wish I had more money in the bank. But I was anti-capitalism, anti-this, anti-that, ever since the 60s, you know? And it was a bad choice. I should have made some money. And I deliberately didn't bother. And now I'm regretting it, see? So I know. Get your money and then do your work.
This museum feels like the best way for Big Mikey to tell Little Mikey that he believes him. And I believe him too. I believe that he believed that he saw something at 4 years old that he didn't understand, that he's going to spend the rest of his life looking for. And if he doesn't find it, maybe somebody else will.
I just wanted to say that I really appreciate what you're doing here.
All right.
I, for one, am a big Bigfoot fan. Mm-hmm. I started a conspiracy club at my school this year.
Oh, good.
And we got like 30 people come in, and our first presentation was on Bigfoot. All and right. It would have been great to come here before then, but I know I'm going to be back with my friends for sure. So. All right. What school
is it? Maybe I should start asking myself what I'm looking for. What the child in me believed that I thought I had to let go. Maybe I'll find that I've been looking for Bigfoot all along.
I think it's interesting that a lot of problems in communication and understanding are just problems of what we decide to call things.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
People, at the end of the day, a lot of us essentially understand and believe all the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We just have different ways of communicating it and different ways of
the name game. Yeah, it's just the name game.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll let you wrap up here.
Yeah, I gotta get out of here.
Do you have an email address?
Maybe Bigfoot isn't a mythical hominid. Maybe Bigfoot is the thing we need to look for to keep us moving forward. And maybe some people recognize that sooner than others. In Felton, I'm Lance Gardner for Cross Currents.
Lance made that story last year when he was a fellow in KLW's Audio Academy, our radio journalism training program. He produced that story with voicing help from Katie McCutcheon. And you can hear more stories from our Audio Academy. Go online to kalw.org.
You know, there's a legend of a creature that lurks in the swamps and the mountains of North America. You may not believe that he lives, but let me reassure you. He's there.
It was Memorial Day weekend back in 69 when we loaded up the canoes and headed for the river. It said he stands 8 feet tall, walks like a man, but I promise you, he's much bigger. The Indians call him Sasquatch. The mountain men call him Bigfoot.
Tune in tomorrow at 5. California is extending health benefits to low-income young adults, regardless of their immigration status.
Advocates for expanding Medi-Cal to the undocumented community see this as a step towards universal health care.
More on new state laws tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. And now for some local music. This is the Cult Busters from San Jose. They're performing at Art Boutique Music Hall in that city Sunday.
Don't know where to start with all the things that you've done. At times I felt the world collapsing when there was none. When things began to break, I didn't know what to do. And maybe you don't know it, but you were the glue.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Imran Ali Mullick, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, True Gwynn, and Joshua Sorotiak. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
I know it sounds so dumb, but without you I'd be dead. There is no hope without you.